You're listening to The Murder in My Family, brought to you by Abject Entertainment. Be sure to check out some of the other great true crime podcasts from this network, including Missing Persons,
DNA ID,
Scene of the Crime,
Zodiac Speaking,
Beyond Bizarre True Crime,
Citizen Detective,
and
Campus Killings.
All of these podcasts are available for you to binge on right now, wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe where you're listening to this podcast so you don't miss an episode.
The views and opinions expressed by guests on this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the podcast, its host, or sponsors.
If you would like to discuss the murder in your family on this podcast, please be sure to visit themurderinmyfamily.com for more information. This episode may contain unsettling material or subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of The Murder in My Family. I'm your host, Mike Morford. In this episode, we'll be discussing the case of a 30-year-old father of three who was gunned down in the bathroom of a bar during a night out. Despite multiple witnesses and surveillance cameras, his family is still awaiting justice. We'll dive into this case after some quick housekeeping. Independent podcasts like this one depend on word of mouth to bring in new listeners. So if you find that you enjoy this show, please take a moment to rate and review it wherever you listen to your podcast. And be sure to introduce a friend to the show and invite them to listen. With your help, The Murder of My Family can continue to grow and reach a new audience. To learn more about the show or the cases we discuss, please visit themurderofmyfamily.com. You can also find us on Twitter with the handle @MurderMyFam or on Facebook at facebook.com/TMIMFpodcast. If you'd like to support The Murder of My Family and get VIP access to things like ad-free listening, early preview episodes, and bonus content of not only this show, but for every other podcast on the Abject Network of Indie Podcast, consider subscribing to the show with an Abject Insider subscription through Apple Podcast. For only $4.99 a month or $49.99 a year, you'll unlock a variety of listener benefits and you'll be supporting the show in the process. Your support is greatly appreciated.
And thank you to all of the supporters that generously donate to help keep the show growing and improving. One last note. Please support any of the sponsors that you hear on The Murder of My Family the way that those sponsors support the show. It's with our sponsor support that this show can go on and continue to provide a platform to share these stories with you in every episode. Thank you. And now on with the show.
Raymond Sains was a very outgoing and funny young man. He was a father of three young boys, ages 6, 9, and 11. At the time of his death, he was separated from his wife and living with his mom, Mary, and his stepfather. Even though he wasn't living with his wife and kids, his family meant the world to him. He lived for his boys. He was always the life of the party and made friends easily. He would strike up conversations with random people just to be friendly. He was also generous and kind-hearted. He would unselfishly help out those less fortunate, and has even given his jacket to help a homeless man in the wintertime. When Raymond wasn't working a warehouse job on the night shift, he liked spending time with his friends and family. He would often bring Mary flowers for no reason at all. He was also a ladies' man. Once women found out he was separated, you couldn't keep them away. It seems that Raymond was charming and easy to talk to. His funeral was attended by over 300 people. Raymond's memory was honored with a tree and a plaque at the Myler High School. Since Ray got along well with so many people, it was both surprising and shocking when he wound up dead following an interaction with a biker gang. Raymond wasn't a gang member, but he had several childhood friends that perhaps may have followed in that path. And the fact that he had friends that were gang-affiliated hasn't been brought up as a motive for Raymond's murder. On October 11, 2019, 30-year-old Raymond Sains went out for a night of fun. He and some of his friends ended up at a sports bar in San Bernardino, California. We're not naming this bar because we don't want to disrupt any possible trial details that could affect the outcome of that trial. This was a place Raymond was excited to go to. He had been there before, and he thought the wings were fantastic. But Raymond wouldn't leave the bar alive this time. Just after 10 p.m., authorities received calls of shots fired at the bar. When officers responded, they found Raymond in the bathroom, dead from a single gunshot wound to the face. At first, it seemed like it could have been a random shooting. But luckily, the bar had multiple surveillance cameras throughout the establishment, a dozen of them actually. While there were no cameras in the bathroom where the murder itself took place, there were enough camera angles elsewhere to help tell the full story of what happened. Camera number 7 covered the hallway outside the men's restroom and the back door of the bar, and the surveillance made it clear that something did happen leading up to the murder. 3 men, who were choosing not to name to err on the side of caution in relation to trials, witnesses, and the like, were seen together in the hallway. 2 more men entered the bathroom together. After that, another man joined the group in the hallway, just before Raymond is seen entering the hallway. One of the men was seen tapping another on the shoulder to get his attention, and then he pointed to the back door of the bar. The 2 then exited through that door, but left it propped open with a stool on their way out. The men left in the hallway were having an obvious argument about something. One of Raymond's friends who was with him that night walked up to the group outside the bathroom, and he could tell something was wrong. He got a bad vibe and tried to convince Raymond to leave the bar multiple times. One of the men opened the bathroom door and made a motion with his hand, as if he was inviting Raymond and a couple of the other men into this bathroom. All of the men gathering in this bathroom is a little bit odd, because it's very small, just 6 by 10 feet, and it only has 1 urinal and 1 toilet. The 5 men were in the tiny bathroom together for more than 2 minutes before the bar's manager noticed something was odd. Somebody was blocking the men's room door from the outside, preventing people from entering. The manager went to the bathroom, and after a tug of war with one of the men, managed to get the door open and go inside. Another man later followed him into the bathroom. While everything seemed fine, he told the men that there should only be 2 people in the restroom at a time, and he tried to clear the crowd before leaving. A moment later, he was reportedly monitoring the surveillance cameras when he saw 5 men run from the bathroom. They all ran toward the front door, except for one of the men, who was friends with the man that had propped open the back door with a stool. This detail seems to indicate the attack was premeditated, and that perhaps the door had been left open so that he could escape. The man tried to make it out the back door, but someone was trying to enter through it at the same time, so the man turned around and ran back out towards the front door with the others. The bar manager went back into the bathroom to see what had happened, and there he found Raymond on the floor in a pool of blood. He was shot in the face, and sadly he wouldn't recover. One of the men in the group later provided a name to police of the man that allegedly shot Raymond. A couple other men in the bathroom claimed that they were both using the same toilet at the same time and didn't actually see the shooting. Again, this was a 6-foot by 10-foot bathroom with an open layout. A search of the suspected shooter's home revealed that he was a high-ranking member of an outlaw motorcycle gang. He had patches indicating that he was the vice president of the gang, and were also not naming that biker gang for reasons related to a successful prosecution in this case. The other men who were in the bathroom that night were involved with other outlaw motorcycle gangs. All 3 gangs in total reportedly have a common rival with yet another biker gang. A motion to join the trials of 2 men, one that pulled the trigger, and the other who's alleged to have aided him, read in part, "While defendants played different roles in the murder, their roles were necessary for the execution to be carried out." Multiple arrests were made with charges ranging from murder, conspiracy to commit murder, street terrorism, and accessory after the fact. A trial recall hearing for one of the accused was scheduled for Tuesday, March 19, 2024, just days before this episode was recorded. It's been over 4 years since Raymond's murder, and still no trial, despite at least 1 cooperating witness. Until the trial is complete, we may never know why Raymond was targeted, or if he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Of course, we may never know why Raymond died. It's important to remember that Raymond himself wasn't believed to be in any gangs. He was just a guy out with some friends, hoping to enjoy some drinks and some wings. Raymond's family is still awaiting justice 4 years after his murder. His boys are older now, and having to make their way without their father in their lives. Raymond's mom, Mary, joined me to discuss her son's case and the challenges ahead as she bravely seeks justice, hoping that these violent biker gang members won't be able to hurt anyone else ever again. That discussion is coming up in just a moment. Hi, Mary. Thanks for coming on the Murder of My Family to discuss your son Raymond's case with us.
Hi, Mike. Pleasure's mine.
I'm happy to have you here. I know your son was gunned down tragically and his life was cut short. He had a lot to live for. Before we talk about what happened to Raymond, can you tell listeners a little more about him and what he was like?
Sure. He was so funny. He was the comedian in the family. He was the life of the party. He was so friendly. He can strike up conversations with anyone, strangers, complete strangers. And everybody fell in love with him. He was very charming. He was a ladies' man. He was just fun to be around. He was a father. Him and his wife were at the time separated, but he had three children, three boys. One is six. One was six. The other one, nine. And the other, the oldest was 11. And the boys were his life. I mean, he lived for those boys. It was very hard for him to be away from them when he left his wife. But he spent as much time as he could with them. And he was a hardworking person. And he was very giving. He has given his jacket to a cold homeless person. He saw somebody in the street that needed food. He would buy them a burger. He would do anything for people that were less fortunate than him. That's the kind of person he was.
It doesn't sound like Raymond was somebody that would be, you know, the kind of person that would wind up losing his life in such a violent way for this to happen to him.
Not at all. Not at all. It was a shock.
I guess if you can you walk us through the events of that day? It was October 11, 2019, a Friday, I think. Can you walk us through, as you understand it, what happened, how your son came to be there and cross paths with the people that he crossed paths with?
Sure. It was one day early. He was there for many hours. He went with a friend of his to this bar. At the time, there was several bikers there. It was a biker gang. There were several bikers there. He wanted to go and have a drink. And what I was told, he wanted to have their chicken wings. He liked their wings. So they went. They were having a good time, drinking, eating, dancing. He even bought one of the guys a beer. He was talking to them. He's even shown on surveillance video hugging one of them. And his friend told me that before they were about to leave, and he said, "I'm going to go to the bathroom." He goes to the bathroom, followed by other people. There was already two other bikers in the bar. And that's where they confronted him and shot him. There has been, I found out later during the preliminary hearing, was that it was a conspiracy. There's a conspiracy charge on these people because they apparently conspired to do this ahead of time. And it was planned. I don't know if they targeted him. I don't know if it was going to be anybody, just anyone. But it happened to him.
What kind of, was this some kind of initiation or something like that? Some kind of gang
thing
that they set up?
There was a prospect in the bathroom with them who held the door shut. He was holding the door shut when other people tried to come in. There is video, surveillance video on all of this. There was videos in the bar or cameras in the bar, and everything was recorded except for what transpired in the bathroom. Now, this bathroom is 6 by 10, very small. But yet there was six people in this bathroom. So there would be no reason. There was only one toilet, one urinal, one sink in a very cramped place. There would be no reason why there would be so many people in the bathroom unless something was going down. And they happened to follow him in. After two of them were in there, four of them followed him in and held the door shut, confronted him. I don't know what words were exchanged, but that's when they shot him in the face and he died almost instantly.
And what happened from there? Did they immediately run out of the bar and take off?
Well, no, they didn't run. They walked calmly out of the bar. The suspected shooter, yelled at some people to get rid of the cameras. I should say that this bar is known to be owned by a biker affiliate. They're the owners. And they've been photographed with these different biker gangs. They say they are not part of the gang, but the owners have been photographed with them. But the thing was, they did not get rid of the cameras. And that's how they were identified. So they walked out of the bar, all left. And that's when a couple of people ran in there, tried to help him, but it was already too late. He wouldn't have survived. And he died. Then they were caught. They did a gang swoop where different law enforcement agencies went to their homes and place of employment and arrested five people from various biker gangs. And this all happened all at the same time. It was coordinated. And it happened on February 20th, 2020. And they did a search. They searched the bar. They searched the bar owner's home. They confiscated paraphernalia. They confiscated videos, pictures. There was other video that was not given to the police at the time that they found later. And after the preliminary hearings, charges were dropped on two of the men because they said that they were just, they didn't have enough to hold them. In other words, those two that were in the bar. So currently there are three that are awaiting trial, and it's been 4 years.
And what's the holdup with the trial? Is part of it have to do with COVID?
It started out with COVID, and then it turned out that one attorney wasn't ready at the time because he was in a different trial, or one attorney passed away, one died, one defendant fired his attorney and had to get a different attorney. And what I hear is there's a lot of discovery on this case. Tons of video, tons of pictures, tons of witnesses, tons of testimony that it's a lot for one attorney to go through. So they take months. Once there's a new attorney on the case, it takes months for them to catch up. So that's part of the delay. So they had originally were going to do one trial for all three. And then they separated them. Then they put them back together. And just last week, I was told that they were separating them again. So I'm going to have to go through three trials.
A whole nother painful thing, I imagine, on top of losing your son.
Right, because I did sit in on the preliminary hearing, and it was very painful watching looking at those pictures, listening to what the police were saying about what happened. It was painful then, and I'm sure the trial will bring out more.
I just want to step back, if I can, for a second. Mm-hmm. Had Raymond ever been to this bar before? Did he know it? Was it a place that he felt safe at, or was this some place new to him he wasn't familiar with?
He knew this bar. He had been to it before. That's why he wanted to go back to try the chicken wings, because he liked them at this place. He had been there before. He had met some of the bikers before, not personally, he talked to them, because he would talk to everybody. He never, there was never any conflict between them. So as far as I know.
Not like they had some kind of beef that people know about, to where they said, next time we see Raymond, we're going to do something to him. Not that kind of thing.
Not at all. Not at all. Nothing like that has come up in any of the hearings that I've been to. And I've been to about all of them. Now, this is a very notorious biker gang, and they have not threatened, but they have tried to intimidate the DA, the deputy DA who is in charge of the case, by walking by her office, by driving by her and waving at her. They have not done anything to me when I'm in court, but this is how they operate, by intimidation.
And is this a gang that you feel comfortable naming, or would you rather not name them?
I would name them after the trial, but I don't want to jeopardize anything to do with the trial now.
Yeah. And I can't blame you for that. The last thing you want to do is, put something out there and then have it somehow come back to cause further delays or jeopardize the trial, that kind of thing.
Correct. Especially if somebody hears it, that might be a potential juror. I don't know.
Yeah. So now you're sort of stuck in this limbo. You're here trying to get justice for Raymond, and you're sort of at a standstill, and you've got to go to these different trials. How tough is that on top of everything you've had to deal with so far? How tough is it having to go through each of these separate things?
Oh my gosh, it is very difficult. But I think of Raymond. I think of, this is what I had to do for him as his mom. Like, I try to put my feelings aside and say, this, I'm doing it for him. I mean, I have to just put it aside. And I feel like that's my job as a mother.
And it's frightening, because obviously some of these biker gangs can be very dangerous. And, if they have done this to your son, there's a possibility they've done it to other people too. And if they somehow get off, there's a chance they could do it to somebody else in the future.
Obviously, yes. I mean, they have. The person that was the shooter, he had just got out of prison for attempted murder and a drive-by shooting. He had just got out months before. So these are what are called the one percenters, and they advertise that. They found paraphernalia in their homes that said one percenters. One had a one percenter patch on his jacket. So if you don't know what the one percenters mean, it means those that are, that don't have any, they'll shoot to kill. They will.
They don't have any qualms, or
no, you're
not,
you're
shy,
right,
about that.
Not okay. At all. Not at all.
So you talked a little bit about the history of these guys, and that they do have criminal stuff, and they've been tried to intimidate the DA. As far as you can tell, is any of this intimidation working, or is there going to be a problem, getting a jury and getting, the DA to try this case, or what's the status?
Well, the DA, she is a gang prosecutor, and she says she's ready to go. She has no problem whatsoever, she said. I do worry about a jury. I would hate for them to intimidate a jury. Because, you know, I mean, I would hate for that to happen, or for them to be intimidated and then not get a just conviction, you know? I don't even know how to put it into words, but I feel justice needs to happen. And if they're going to be intimidating to a jury, I mean, that might not happen.
Yeah. And that makes perfect sense. And, you know, it's too bad there's not some way to, you know, maybe have the jury anonymous and, you know, not so people don't know who they are. I mean, there is some anonymity, but as long as you can see them in court, you can probably figure out if you try hard enough who they are. So, you know, if there was a way to make the jury, you know, sequestered so nobody could even see them, let alone know their names, maybe that would make for a safer an event at court to where they're not intimidated, and you can hope for that fair and just trial.
I hope the judge sees that is a factor.
Yeah. And what kind of charges and what kind of time are they looking at?
Well, the prosecuting attorney, the deputy DA, she was able to add on gang enhancement charges. So that adds extra years, but the main shooter is looking at 25 to life with the gang enhancements. So that makes it 75 years. The others are looking at, the other two are looking at also 25 years. Now, one of the guys was offered a plea deal of 10 years and he refused to take it. So he wants to go to trial. Now, this guy, he was a sergeant of arms at the time. Oh, I'm sorry. He was the vice president. And now he is the president of his chapter because of this incident. So they were doing it for the promotion of their position.
So your son dies and these guys are getting promotions out of it.
Correct. Now, one of the guys, one of them that they dropped the charges on, he did tell who did it, who was the shooter. And he has been ostracized by his gang. He was the sergeant of arms of his chapter. And he was banned from the gang. And his father was a lifelong member of this gang. And when his father passed away, he was not allowed to go to the funeral because of this ban. So he was totally ostracized by this group.
And I imagine he's got to be pretty scared too, if this group probably doesn't like people that rat out on them.
Right. And he is scheduled to testify.
Do you know if he's in any kind of protective custody or anything like that?
I do not know. I have seen him at different hearings when he's called to attend, and he attends every one. But no, I don't know.
Oh. So, you know, you mentioned this has really been dragging on. It's been, you know, 4 years now, and COVID was part of that. But, you know, all these other hurdles and delays and stuff have really put off you receiving justice. How, you know, I think we talked a little bit about it, but how do you long term, how do you think this is going to affect you when you come out the other side of it? You know,
after,
how do you think you're going to be? I mean, obviously whatever sentence they get, it's not going to bring your son back, but right. How do you think you're going to feel at the end of that?
Well, right now I live day to day. I think about my son every single day. And I really want this to be over. I want this trial to get started so it could be over. And after it's over, I'll feel some relief. I'm still going to think about him every day. I mean, it's not going to bring closure 100%, but I'm going to enjoy being a grandmother to his kids. And his kids miss him so much. I mean, the oldest is now 16. He goes into his closet and wears his clothes. They asked me for some of his items, his shoes. You miss their dad. But, you know, we just got to keep moving. I mean, I don't even know how I'm going to feel afterwards. I've been living with this for 4 years. I don't know what's going to happen.
Have you had to do any kind of grief counseling or leaned on your faith or anything like that to help get you through this?
Well, I did have grief counseling after it happened. Me and my husband had group therapy with just the two of us. But once COVID happened, we stopped going because our therapist, his family was in a car accident, and then COVID, and just a lot of things came into play, and then we stopped going. I do have two support groups that I'm part of. I'm part of Parents of Murdered Children, and I'm also part of A Mother's Voice. A Mother's Voice goes to Sacramento, because I'm from California. They go to Sacramento and advocate for laws for victims, which the laws in California are so they're geared to favor the perpetrator. We don't have a lot of laws that protect the victims, and that's a problem. So I try to advocate for that with this group that I'm in, A Mother's Voice. So that helps.
Yeah. Because I know we have listeners on this show that are probably going through similar experiences to what you've gone through. So, you know, I think they can learn from your experience or whatever advice you can give. Along those lines, do you have any advice or anything that you've found has worked for you to help get through this and make it through this kind of situation?
I think make sure you know who your support systems are. Say your child's name or your loved one's name often. Talk about them. Talk about the good times. Don't make it everything about the event itself, because that's just going to depress. It's depressing. So talk about the good times.
And not focus on the, ending, yeah.
Right.
So one thing I noticed when I was looking through this, I didn't see much at all about Raymond's case online and in some of the articles. I'm curious, why was this story sort of, it seems like a pretty big news story. Why was it sort of ignored, do you think?
So after it happened, before we knew who did it, the lead detective told me that it was a big case. He told me it was a big case. And I didn't even know why he was telling me this, because I didn't know who did it. But I think they have tried to keep it quiet just because of the presence in court. I don't think they want any more biker people in court than... You know, that would probably bring a lot of attention if they knew. I'm not sure.
You think maybe they want to keep it low key and just not.
I think so.
Put it out there too much. Okay.
Right. I think so. Because I thought when they did this multi-agency gang swoop and the bust that they did at the bar, I thought that would have brought some attention to news medias because it was big, but it didn't. I mean, there was It was across the state of California. I mean, they caught five people, all that were scattered in different locations.
And maybe it's a good thing then that if they're not making a big story out of it, then they can have a more low-key trial and get justice sooner without any kind of distractions.
Maybe, because I don't see a lot of things in the news about this kind of crime. And I think it happens more often than we know.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these biker type gangs have very bad reputations of doing this kind of stuff. So, and California being such a big state with so many different biker gangs in there, probably it is something that probably happens more frequently than we hear about.
Yeah. And one of the attorneys for the main shooter, he was paid for by the gang that he's affiliated with, and he is a he is their attorney that they get for a lot of different things. He's known. I mean, I googled his name, and he has represented this gang in many trials. And he's very famous for it too. But he has currently a medical affliction. I shouldn't say what he has, but where he can no longer represent the shooter. So he has a different attorney. But the attorney that he had was very, I don't know if you ever saw Better Call Saul, but he reminded me of that type of attorney. He really did. He likened the gang to, he said they weren't a gang for one thing. And he said, if they're a gang, then police officers are a gang. Like, he was a shady character. And I'm just glad he's not on this trial anymore. But
yeah,
that's who protects these gangs. I mean, they pay these attorneys lots of money and they buy them. And just to have them in their corner.
Yeah. And you know, but obviously in this country, everybody's entitled to defense, but still doesn't make you feel any better when you're the grieving mother of someone who's gunned down and you're looking for justice.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I'm a big advocate for wrongful convictions, big advocate, but if you're guilty, I mean, you got to pay the price.
Sure. When people hear someone's name or they think back on him and they think about him, what do you want them to remember Raymond for? What do you want his legacy to be?
Oh, gosh. That he had a big heart. He had a big heart. He would help anybody in need. He really would. I'll just give you a little story. After he passed, his friends wanted to have a car wash to raise funds for his children. So they had it just down the street from this particular bar that he was at. It was not very far from the bar. And there was this homeless guy walking past the car wash, and he saw my son's picture on the little board that they had out there. He saw his picture, and he said, "Hey, that's the guy that just bought me a hamburger, whatever the food was. He bought him a meal." He goes, "I gotta help you guys because this guy fed me when I was hungry." And this guy went in there and started working his butt off, cleaning, washing all kinds of cars. And my son's friends were so grateful to him that they gave him their clothes. They gave him shirts. They gave him a pair of shoes. They bought him more food. I mean, they were so grateful to this guy because he was grateful to my son. Because that's the kind of person Raymond was. And his friends are that way too.
Yeah. Well, that's got to make you proud as a mom to hear those kind of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he did it without, with, out any, he didn't want any acknowledgement, because I heard so many stories after he passed that he wouldn't make it a big point of saying, oh, I bought somebody a burger today, or I gave some guy a dollar on the street because he didn't have one. He would not say anything. He kept it to himself.
It wasn't somebody that was looking for praise for doing something good for
someone. Not at all.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, that lives on through his children, your grandchildren, and something to remind you of him for the mm-hmm. rest of your life.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing Raymond's story with us and talking about his life. And I really sincerely hope that you get justice and the people that did this, you know, pay the price for what they did, and they can't do this to somebody else going forward.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. I hope so too.
Thank you once again for joining me for this episode of The Murder of My Family. I'd like to thank Sonny Landon for writing and research assistance in this episode. We'll be back here soon with an all-new episode of The Murder of My Family, and I hope you'll join me for it. But before you go, remember that every murder victim means something to somebody.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.